Okay. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. So, right, logistics. Remember, homework is due this week, the warm-up. I think this is on the actual homework description, but if you're having trouble tracking down what's happening when you're submitting to the autograder, it can be very helpful to test your string separate function separately from your main function. So sort of separate the two parts of the assignment and just run your string separation with specific tests. That can help you track down what's different between what's working on your machine versus the grading machine. Okay, so last time we were talking about exceptions. We're going to wrap up that conversation, and then that will sort of naturally move into a discussion on signals, and we'll see how these concepts relate. We were talking about exceptions because we really needed to address kind of this like thorny problem, which is, sure, a processor can execute correct instructions, simple instructions, no problem. But what happens when the program does something the hardware can't complete? So a couple examples, right, accessing memory that it's not allocated, or trying to run divide by zero, something like this. That's where this notion of exceptions came in, because now the hardware has some recourse, right? It can run the exception handler that the operating system has set up. And this way, we can sort of address this in some way. This also let us do things like system calls. So the process can ask for resources that it can't directly access, but it can access sort of through the operating system, with the operating system's help. And so to facilitate that interaction, we can use exceptions. We kind of classify these into, oh, sorry, yeah, so that's the exception. Classify this into a couple of groups, right? So we have system calls as one type, faults or errors or sort of unusual, some sort of incorrect behavior, right? We've all run into these, right? We've all had our program seg fault at one time or another. And then also this third category of interrupts, external operations or input-output operations that the processor has to handle. We talked about the first two quite a bit last time. Just wrap up with looking at some external I/O exceptions. And this is how a processor can interact with other outside peripherals, such as keyboards, hard drives, networks. This might also happen if like something is broken or faulty and goes wrong with the hardware. And really, and this is sort of so critical, because when we think of computing today, yeah, sure, we're talking about executing instructions, but really when we interact with computers, right, it's all of the complexity, all of the richness. So being able to save state, save files, and use the internet, but also respond to button presses, add new sensors like Face ID. All of these require some other mechanism to communicate with your programs, and this happens through exceptions. Now, these input outputs can we can sort of we have to think about it kind of in two different ways. So the first notion is that sometimes if we're trying to read in some input, right, whatever that is, we'll probably keep using a simple example of like a keyboard press, pretty easy for us to sort of think about. Your program might want keyboard input, but it might not be, sorry, program might want keyboard input, and sometimes that may have already happened, right? You press the button, then the program asks for it, and there might be that input might be ready to go. And so we can handle that pretty directly. But other times, and probably the more common case, is that that's actually not going to be the case. When your program asks for some input, it's actually not ready yet. And this is important because the time scales between how a CPU can execute instructions and how we can like move our physical fingers are completely different. CPU is way faster, like orders of magnitude faster. And so the chances that we have hit the button at the exact time are very, very small. More likely, the program is way ahead of us, and it's waiting for us to like move our finger and touch the button. And so more likely, we have the second case where the program is going to ask for input. The operating system is going to be like, sure, I will handle that for you. But I don't have anything ready right now, so I'm going to go off and do other work, probably run other programs or other processes. And then eventually when that button does get pressed, right, there is input, now I can deliver it to the process that requested. And so if this happens on the input side, it can also happen on the output side. Sometimes if you request some sort of output displaying to a screen or writing to the terminal or vibrating your phone, it might be ready to do that immediately, and the operating system can go ahead and do that, that's fine. But perhaps that other device, whatever we're trying to communicate with, is not ready, right? And so we have this sort of the same interaction where we can ask the OS says, sure, but it's not ready to happen right away. The OS will sort of wait, probably do something else in the meantime. And then when that device is ready, complete your request and then tell you that, okay, this finished. And this is how we end up with this diagram that we looked at a couple times last time, where when we're starting here, right, we on some core here, our program runs, we ask for some input from something, maybe let's say the keyboard. That calls into the operating system through a syscall, that's fine, but there's no button press ready. We have to wait, again, we have to wait for our sort of physical motion, which is much, much, much slower. We don't want to just block everything and wait, we'd rather run some other process and maybe a couple other things that actually have useful work to do in the meantime. And then when we do get the press from the keyboard, then we can go ahead and context switch back to our program, and so it can handle that input. Yes? Ah, okay, so right here we have this sort of, here in the middle here? Okay, sorry, let's look at this one. Okay, so this sort of gray hash mark here representing the operating system. So this is basically representing that if green is one process and purple is a different process, to do that context switch, to go from one to the other, we're going to need the operating system to be involved. And so for some reason, the green process stopped executing. The operating system took over. It decided to run the purple. So it did a context switch, and it would have to restore the registers for the purple process for it to run successfully. And so we need the operating system to have at least a little bit of time to do that. Other questions on input, output, and exceptions? Okay, so I've kind of mentioned a couple times context switch and exception, and these are definitely sort of related concepts, but we do want to tease them apart a little bit. So when we say exception, that's really the part where the hardware is involved and it's running that operating system routine. Sort of whatever the operating system asks for to execute whenever one of these specific exceptions occurs. Now, system call is an example of this, right? The process calls a system call. That's an instruction. The processor tries to execute that instruction, and it by doing that, it invokes a particular OS routine. In contrast, the context switch is an operating system sort of running, going from one process and then switching to another process. To do that, it's got to save some state on behalf of the original process that's executing, and then restore the state for whatever process is trying to switch to. Because the process that we want to start running again needs to have whatever was in registers put back the way it expected. Because whatever instruction runs next is going to assume that the registers were the way that they were whenever it was interrupted. Now, these are definitely related, because sometimes, as a result of an exception, we might also do a context switch. Yes? So it says for the context switch, right, by saving old register values. So we'll definitely go into more detail about this, but for now, they're going to be saved in memory. So the operating system is going to have some memory somewhere that it can save these registers on behalf of the process. Okay, good? Any questions? All right. Okay, so let's look at a couple examples and maybe spend 3 minutes, talk to your neighbors. Which ones of these require or are going to involve an exception? And which one of these are going to involve a context switch? So you can talk to your neighbors, take 3 minutes, and then we'll discuss how these break down. All right, so operation A, program calls a function in the standard library. Exception, no exception. Right, so no exception there, right? That's just a function call. Now, the fact that it's the standard library and maybe that library function would call a system call, maybe, but for what this says is it's just the function call, like any other. That's just control flow within the program, no exception. Program writes a file to disk. Exception, no exception. Right, yeah, so that's gonna need an exception, right? Because we need the operating system to be involved because we can't access the disk directly, and so we're gonna have to do a system call, and that's gonna be an exception. C, program A goes to sleep, letting B run. Exception, no exception. Exception, no exception. So we are gonna need an exception here as well, because to do the, sort of go from one process to another, we're gonna need the operating system involved because it's really the only operating system that can set up that other process to run correctly. And so to make that sort of stopping the process A so that it can go to sleep and we go and we let the context switch happen, we're gonna need an exception. Program exits. Exception, no exception. Exception, no exception. So that's gonna be exception, right? That's exit is a system call, an exception. E, program returns from one function to another function. Exception or no exception, right? So I see a lot of thumbs down, right? Again, that's sort of just normal control flow within the program. Hardware is sort of not gonna be involved with an exception there. It's just gonna return from one function to another. Program pops a value from the stack. Exception, no exception. All right. Yeah, so thumbs down. So accessing the stack or adjusting the stack, that's already memory that's been allocated to the process. And so that's just gonna at most be a normal memory lookup or a register modification, sort of part of a normal control flow of a program, not going to require an exception. Okay, how about context switches? So A, is there gonna be a context switch? Right, no, again, this is just a function call. Program B writes a file to disk. Context switch? That one's kind of a maybe, right? It depends. So it's possible that the operating system decides not to run this operation and switches to another, but strictly speaking, it's not required to do a context switch. It could go back to that same running process. Program C, program A goes to sleep and then B runs. Context switch? Yeah, that's sort of like kind of the base case for a context switch, right? Like one process stops, there's nothing left to do right now, and we go switch to another one. Program exits, context switch. Yeah, there's gonna be a context switch because once that one process exits, we probably want something else to take over. We don't just want that to be the end of that CPU executing instructions, and so we'll switch to some other execution thread or process that can run. E, program returns from one function to another. Context switch? No context switch here, right? Again, just a normal control flow through a program, and popping a value from the stack, context switch? No, again, sort of just normal operation. Okay, all right. And those are sort of described in the slides as well. Okay. Actually, before we get to this, any questions on those? Yeah.
Just to clarify, so basically any time you want the OS to be involved
in the so the question is, I'm going to assume is a process. Anytime a process or is executing, you need the operating system to get involved, yes, we're going to need an exception. Because that is our mechanism for transitioning the actual CPU state from user mode to kernel mode so the operating system can execute. Mm-hmm. Pierre?
So I understand that with the context switch, specifically the build requisite arguments in the registers and
Okay, so let's take B as an example. So program writes a file to disk. Now, in doing that, the operating system is going to have to do some work, right? Somehow it needs to communicate with that disk, somehow. And we're not specifying exactly how that happens, but we know that it's going to have to do something to send data to that disk. And sort of intuitively, if the operating system is executing, well, that's just running code, right? And so we're going to need registers to do that, right, to make that sort of functional, likely. And so if the operating system is using those registers, whatever program that program was running can't also be using those registers, right? And so we will have to stave those registers. Typically, on a lot of hardware platforms, when the exception happens, they're saved by the hardware. And if that's okay, if the operating system is fine with that, it can just leave them there, do its work, and then those will get restored. But if it also then chooses to go on to a context switch, it might have to save those somewhere else and go from there. But yes, anytime we're sort of switching modes and we want to run some other thread of computation, we're going to need to keep track of the old registers to be able to put them back later. Yeah. So anytime you want to do a context switch, do you also need an exception? And if that's not the case, then sort of, you know, when could that happen? Generally speaking, we're going to expect there's going to be some exception that gets us to the operating system. I think we just want to separate out that when we do the context switch, we sort of choose to go from one process to another. There's not another exception to get back to that new running process. Okay. All right. Let's see here. Ah, yes, okay. All right, so this is the slide where we talk a little bit about kind of the real world, where these concepts have been developed over decades, and like a lot of things, terminology isn't completely fixed. So we're gonna try to use sort of consistent terminology in this course as you're sort of learning these ideas, but just be aware that these aren't so precise of definitions and so standardized that everyone everywhere will use them in the same way. A lot of times these sort of words get muddled. And so we think of, when we talk about interrupts in this class, we're thinking some sort of external event that's coming in, maybe like, again, a button press. A fault is an error in the program. And a trap from a user space to the kernel is intentional. Like that's a system call that's happening intentionally. But these are definitely related concepts, right? And so these will get used kind of differently. So if you look at other material, they may not stick to precisely those meanings, just so you're aware. Over time, you sort of develop the intuition, and by the context clues, you can kind of understand what actual thing people are referring to. But sometimes it can be confusing. Okay. All right, any questions on exceptions? Okay. All right, that's going to lead into our discussion on signals, which we'll see they have a definite similarity. And that's kind of why we talked about these back to back. Similar functionality in a lot of ways, but with very different purposes. So signals are a feature inside the operating system. Whereas exceptions, of course, require the hardware support, right? Because like a syscall instruction, right? That's an instruction executed by the processor. Signals are contained within the operating system itself. in a lot of ways, these operate like exceptions except for processes. They can be triggered from one process to another. So we actually will look at a command line utility where we can generate a signal. And other things generate signals as well. Probably most notably, or one of the big ones, is Control C. Right? We use that commonly, right, to end the program. And there's kind of this question of like, well, we've been using it, and it typically is a way to sort of exit the program. But what's actually going on there? Right? What's that actually doing? Well, turns out it's a signal. And there's other signals. So segmentation fault, illegal instruction divided by zero. These things might result in signals directed to a process. Now, we talked about exception handlers being the sort of interface between the hardware and the operating system. For signals, we're going to have, get this, a signal handler. And this is going to be within the process. So your program would have the signal handler, and the operating system can call that. And that's how we're going to sort of deliver a signal. Now, it might be helpful to, actually, I'll pause. Yeah, if you have a question?
What's the difference here between the other events that would terminate the program and like a fault?
The difference between other events that would normally terminate the program and a fault, I think a fault, we typically would think of that as an exception. And so a lot of times, we'll talk about this, a lot of times an exception might sort of get forwarded on as a signal. And so it might be helpful to kind of compare the two that we've seen. So exceptions versus signals. The exception, right, that's the handler. When that handler executes, part of the operating system, so it's running in kernel mode. Now the handler for a signal, right, is part of the program, so that's going to run in user mode. An exception, the hardware is sort of invoking that, right? Maybe in response to a particular instruction that's executed, some external event sends an electrical signal, and that causes the processor to run one of these exception handlers, etc. Now, for a signal, it's the operating system that's deciding. And like I mentioned, in a lot of cases, the operating system is sort of choosing to forward on something that started as an exception. So you notice we mentioned like a segmentation fault, right? That might originally be an exception, exception in the hardware, reaches the operating system. The operating system might choose to then send that as a signal to the process that was running when that occurred. Okay. And then here, the hardware is responsible for saving the PC because it knows where that exception started. But because the operating system is mediating a signal, the operating system knows when that signal was introduced and is responsible for storing sort of where the program was at when the signal was delivered. Now, as we'll see, a signal is delivered as a normal function call. And so in your program, you'll have a function. And essentially, the operating system is going to call that function when it wants it to deliver the signal. And so that's going to have sort of the same calling convention that any other function would have. And crucially, whereas with an exception, we're going to sort of change the processor, PC, and execution. With a signal, the process is still running, the thread is still running in the same way, except now it's running the signal handler instead of wherever else it was executing. And this has sort of some important ramifications for how signals work, how signal handlers work, and well, frankly, why they are, you have to be careful and we'll come back to that. All right, so that's kind of the comparison between the exceptions we've seen and signals. Again, they're definitely kind of serving the same general idea, right? Something has happened. We want to be able to notify. We want whatever we're notifying to sort of have some, maybe some way of handling it. Okay, all right, might be helpful to see an example. So consider this relatively simple program. You've probably written a program similar to this, right? Or included this in a larger program. Essentially here we have a buffer and we're sitting in a loop reading in input from standard in, right? And then printing out what we read, and we just sort of do that in a loop. Okay? Nothing too complicated here. And so what we expect is that if we run this program, we're going to see something, an execution like the following, right? If we type something in, then we'll be able, the fgets will read it and return, and we'll sort of get those characters. And just like we discussed at the beginning of today, right, this is probably going to take some time, right, because it's unlikely that the key press is going to happen at exactly the same time. The program's probably running way faster, and we're going to have to wait until finally the user presses something. But we're in a while loop, right? So if we type more, we'll read more. Okay? Nothing surprising. Now, what happens when we press Control C? Right? It's still a keyboard input, right? But that gets detected not as sort of a normal printed character, right, that we want to just pass to fgets. Instead, that has a very different function, right? And what we expect and is that our program just terminates, right? Right, Control C, that just ends it, right? It's kind of a way to get out, you know, in a sense, it's a way to get out of that while loop. All right, now, because we're talking about signals, what's really sort of happening here is that Control C is getting interpreted as a source of a signal that we can then pass to this process, this program that's executing. And so we can actually have this program do something different and not immediately terminate. Okay. So far, so good? Should be a pretty standard program. Now, if we add some code, right, to basically the beginning of this program, we can get sort of different behavior, right? Now we read some input, okay, we print it, right, we get more input comes in, we can, print that. Now we press Control C, and instead of our program terminating, we can print a different message. And keep going, right? Type some more, we sort of keep printing that, right? And so now Control C is not immediately terminating our program. All right, how do we do that? So it's gonna be very important, right, that we fill in what's happening, fill in something here. So something's gotta go here, so that we get this other behavior. And now we actually get this to be printed rather than sort of the program terminating. All right, you with me so far? We'll talk in a second about maybe some use cases for this, but for now let's look at kind of the structure. Like, okay, how do we do this? Like, how do we implement that? Well, the key is that the operating system, right, is handling this signal. And we want to tell it, hey, this is what actually I want to have happen when I get this signal. So if I'm a process and the user types Control C, rather than that signal basically not being handled and therefore what happens is the program terminates, I want to say, you know what? I want to be able to use that signal. Right? I want to set up a handler. And so to do that, we're going to basically, what we have to do is we have to create a function. So again, signal handlers are standard functions. And so the name is not really important, although oftentimes we'll have handle or handler in there, right, so that we know what this is supposed to do. It gets an argument, which is the identifier of the particular signal. And inside of that, right, we can run code, right? And so example here is we're writing out a message. And so now so if we set this up correctly, that's why when we get control C, instead of the program terminating, we have a function that can run. But of course, just in compiling this into the program isn't enough. Inside our main, we have to configure the operating system and say, okay, so if this signal is sent to me, this is what I want to have happen. And the key here is this SIG action line. So this is basically configuring. This is basically going to map to a system call to configure the operating system to say, if I get this signal, SIG interrupt, then I want to use these settings. And we've configured this ACT struct with the signal handler that we want to run. So this type of setup here, where we have this struct, we set the parameters of the struct. Importantly, we set like which function we want to run. And then we pass that in to a standard library function that calls us a system call on our behalf. It's a pretty common control flow that we'll see over and over in this semester as a way to interact with the operating system. Any questions on this code? Yes. Okay, so this is, you know, I hate to say this, right? This is like high level, at least in the context of this class. We don't typically think of C as high level, but in some cases, in some sense, this is, right? So this is the C code, and this, of course, we know has to compile down to assembly and machine code. Now, what's the real operation, like this part up here, maybe I should... Okay, so here, wait, what? Ah, okay. Up into this. So this is just standard, I mean, really, this is just normal C code. It's just low level interacting with the standard library. It's not the code that we would write all the time, but we're writing low level system code like this. This is sort of just pretty standard. Like this, for instance, is just a helper function, which just says we just want this to be empty. Like, I don't want to figure out how this data structure works. I'll just use this helper function, and it knows how this data structure should work. The real operation comes when we call SIG action. And under the hood, SIG action is just like the system calls we looked at last time. And so it's going to set up something. It's going to put the system call number in the right register, and then it's going to call the syscall instruction. And that's going to then trap the operating system. And so it can say, oh, okay, you want to do this SIG action system call. Great, I will register this handler on your behalf, and I will keep track of that, and whatever else the documentation says. Does that make sense? What else? Okay. And so we do all this setup, and then we get back to sort of our normal program. And now the only real difference is that when that signal is directed towards this process, instead of essentially causing it to terminate, we will run this handler instead. Now, looking at this kind of in sort of a diagram of kind of the operational flow here, the way this will work is we will start with the normal program is executing, right, like normal. And then at some point while that's happening, let's say the user presses Control C. So that's going to cause an exception, just like any other, right? Because if we have the I/O from the keyboard, right? We need to handle that, so the operating system has to get involved. We're going to run the exception handler here. Now, because this was control C, the operating system is going to look and go, oh, well, I noticed that rather than sort of, you know, I know that that's supposed to generate, I've configured this so that should generate a signal, but oh, you have a signal handler set up. So whereas normally I would just like, oh, you didn't handle my signal, I'm going to terminate this process. Okay, I'll call your handler. And so the operating system's like, sure, okay, let's run that. Now that's going to run in the user mode, right? Because that's part of the process, part of the program. That handler can run, do whatever it's going to do, right? Whatever you put in that function. Generally then there's a cleanup operation that happens afterwards. So when this signal handler is finished, it can call back into the OS to sort of say, okay, I'm done. There might be some cleanup that the OS will do. And then finally, return back to the normal program, sort of executing where we left off, right? So this point up here, we'll go back to down here. So far, so good? Questions? So something that might be a little bit troubling about this. So this is what happens. But if you're kind of wondering, like, because what happened was sort of we were somewhere in our program, and then okay, the operating system took over. That's fine, right? Because that's like how an exception would normally work, like. If a key press would happen, sure, right? Your program's running, suddenly we have to handle the key press, go back to the program. That's fine. But this is slightly different, right? Because now, instead of going right back to the same point, in the middle, we start running the handler. So that's sort of in the middle of your program. We'll come back to that, but that should be a little bit like, you should be like, when I'm writing a program, I sort of expect, you know, it goes line by line, right? What does it mean to have this thing run in the middle? So we'll have to come back to that. Okay. All right. And no questions. Okay, so there's sort of more than just this one signal we've been looking at, right? Here's a list. You can read the different sort of descriptions. Right, the control C one is pretty common, right? And then also, we're going to use signal user one and user two in the labs and homeworks. So we'll get familiar with those. There's another thought here, though, right? Okay, so we have all these signals. And if a signal is that thing which kind of causes the process to terminate, it's like, well, wait a minute. Now we have a mechanism where we can handle the signal. So now control C, instead of ending, we'll just, right, in this case, you know, our example is just prints a message, okay? Let's just handle all the signals. So, okay, obviously, right, that doesn't quite make sense. We can't just have the process be able to handle any signal and therefore kind of run forever, right? And so, you know, a couple of these, right, you can't. Like, the operating system won't let you, right? Because then, yeah, then your process could sort of just kind of keep going indefinitely and that would be bad, right? Because if something goes wrong or just the operating system doesn't want to run it anymore. But for these other ones, we can set up handlers. But that isn't quite the full story, because what does that look like? So let's look at an example. So we've all had the segmentation fault signal sent to our program, right? At some point, you know, we didn't quite allocate memory correctly, and we get that dreaded segmentation fault. Well, that's coming because an exception happened and the operating system decided to propagate that through as a signal, and that went to your program. Well, let's set up a handler for it. So what's the major difference there is right now, instead of that signal immediately terminating the program, it's going to run this handler, right? And so this should look, I mean, this is the same as we saw before. So same setup, just different signal, right? And we can print that message. Now, so in this program, okay, so we did that, and now we run this instruction where we're trying to move this register to some, for this sake of argument, right, it's some random memory address. What happens? Well, right, we know that that instruction is not going to be able to succeed, and so we're going to get the signal, but now we're handling the signal, and so this handler will get called. But this is unfortunately not going to fix our problem, because what we're actually going to see is this. It's going to run that handler, and then when we go back to where we were, we're going to re-execute that instruction, which is then going to cause a fault and the exception and then the signal, and then the handler's going to run again, printing it, and we're going to go back to where we were and cause the same fault, and we're just going to sit there and do that continuously. And so just handling the signal is not necessarily enough, because we don't actually, that it's not always clear exactly what we should do in that handler if we even wanted to remedy this situation. Any questions on this? Yeah.
So right now, as we're handling the technical, are we just like pending, but we're not actually doing anything?
Right. So question is, in this case, we're just printing something, we're not actually doing anything about it. And that's correct, right? So in our handler, the only thing we're doing is this puts call to output this string, but we're not doing anything here that would make it so that when we run this instruction a second time, we get a different output. And so when we write signal handling code, right, we have to be careful. Because before we sort of just get the fault, you know, your program would terminate, and now we have sort of this behavior, which is also probably not what we really want. Okay. So as part of signals, there's an API here for both setting up signals, sending signals, waiting until we get a signal, and we can also mask signals as well. So we've seen the sig action. So that's registering the handler. Kill is the operation for sending a signal, and we can send it from one process to another. Pause, we can sort of wait until we get a signal, and procmask here is a way to block a signal. And so that doesn't mean block as in the operating system will sort of just no longer understand it or use it. It just means that instead of it being delivered to the process, the operating system will just queue it, it'll be pending, and then when that signal is unblocked, it can actually deliver the signal to the process. Yeah?
When
you're doing a context switch, is that done through signals? No. It's different. And these are sort of some of the main APIs that we'll use in this class. There's definitely more to this. But I just wanted to highlight the ones that are, I think, used most commonly. Now, these are the, there's the standard library versions that we can call from C. There's also generally a, for the ones that make sense, a command line version, essentially just a wrapper around those exact same calls. So for example, we can call, we can use kill in C code, but we can also use it as command line. So for this example, this is saying send a signal to process 1, 2, 3, 4. And if we don't specify, we get, we'll send sig terminate, matches the C call version. And in the second one, same idea, we're sending to 1, 2, 3, 4, except now we're specifying that we want to send the signal user 1. And so we can do that same thing in C code. So that's how we can send signals to sort of any process based on process ID. Yeah. Yeah, so this signal, right, how is sig user one different from sig term, right? And so, yes, they're treated very differently by the operating system. So sig term cannot be masked by the, or handled by the process, and so that's telling the operating system, I want to terminate this process. Sig user one can be handled by the other process, and so if that process is set up the handler, then it will get that, that signal handler will execute. Now, if it hasn't set up that handler, the operating system is gonna, it's gonna be effectively the same thing. It's gonna end up terminating the process. All right. So one of the themes of today is there's some subtlety with signals. We've talked about, we kind of introduced a little bit that we're sort of injecting, if you will, we're running code in the middle of a thread, which is a little bit odd. If we handle a signal, but then we go right back to run the same instruction, we can end up in this loop. Another subtlety here that we have to keep in mind is that delivering and sending a signal is not always going to be immediate. So as we kind of think about this, right, this is all mediated by the operating system. And the operating system has some flexibility on exactly when it wants to deliver these signals and how it's going to run those. And so in this example here, right, if we have two processes, A and B, if A calls this kill function to send this signal to B, well, kill is a system call, right? So that is going to trap to the OS here, and the OS is going to record that process A wants to send this signal. But the OS is not obligated to immediately, like, upon learning that, deliver it to process B. And so in this case, process the kernel sort of saves that and then returns, right? And we go back to running process A on this core. And process A is going to continue operating, right? This kill function, this, the standard library function, is returned, and whatever code is after is going to continue running. It does not mean that signal has been delivered. Now, at some point, process B is executing here, right? And it gets interrupted. Context switch to the kernel. The kernel sees, like, oh, okay, there's a signal pending, and you have a handler registered, and so now I'm going to run your signal handler. All right, and that could be at some later time. Questions? So the takeaway here is that when we're writing programs using these signals, we have to kind of understand that even though we ran the line of code, like we ran the kill function, it returned, it doesn't directly mean that what we wanted to happen, which is we wanted the signal to go to this other process, has actually happened yet. Right? That might happen later. It's also possible that maybe it did happen. And so we have to make sure that we understand, like, all we're really doing is registering with the OS that I want this signal to be delivered, and the OS is going to deliver it at some point. Yeah. Yeah, so here we've got the green is just process A and blue is process B. They happen to be running sort of on separate cores. So they are running simultaneously. The kill here, so this kill function is a wrapper around a system call, and that's the send. You can think of that as the sort of initiating the signal. That returns, and all we've done is say, hey, OS, I want to send this signal. And the OS is like, okay, you want to send this, great. Done. I'm going to return, and you continue executing. It does not mean that you sent it and it was delivered to the other process. Right? That happens at some later time. All right. Okay, so this can lead to some interesting behavior. All right. We have two programs here. These are running as process ID 1000, process ID 2000. They're sort of running at the same time, okay? And you can see they're both sort of doing a lot of the same code we've seen. And so they're setting up signal handlers for SIG user 1 in both of these cases, okay? And then we have, and then process ID 1000 is doing a little bit more, okay? So let's take 3 minutes, talk to your neighbors. If these are both running, what do we expect to happen? Who would like more time? A little more time? All right. How many for A? We'll get XY. B, just X. C, Y. D, YX. E, X or XY. Okay. F, G, H, something else, or don't know. Okay, so I think we had split between A and E. All right, so what's gonna sort of happen if we run this? And I think this really highlights the sort of complexity of this kind of code. So first we can look at what happens when we get here. So process 1000 calls kill to its own process ID with this signal, sig user 1. So this, if you do kill to your own process ID, is guaranteed to run the handler, turns out. And so this is going to run the handler here. And so we will print X. Now what happens? Okay, so there's a couple different cases here. So in one case, when this second kill here runs to signal the other process with the same signal. Okay, so one case is that, let's say that this process ID 2000 had started, but hadn't gotten very far for whatever reason, right? The operating system It was interrupted, right? It was executing, and it interrupted pretty early on. Well, now this process is there. It is not registered. We haven't called sig action yet, right? So this hasn't happened yet, and so we haven't registered anything. We send the signal, right? It's possible that the other program would crash, right? Because it hasn't set up a handler, but it got a signal. So that could happen, right? Another option is, maybe this process 2000 did sort of run, and before we got to any of the kills in the first process, we got here, right? I don't know how to mark that. Okay, so we were executing main, we did some setup, and then we returned from main. Well, what happens if you return from main? Your program exits. And so this process is over at this point. And so when we call this, right, there's nothing to signal. There is no process 2000 anymore. And so then there we just get X. Now to get XY, we would need when we get here in the process 2000, we would have to have that be interrupted at exactly that point. So the handler is set up, but it hasn't exited yet. And we deliver the signal, and so this actually does run. So there's a few options that can happen here. Most likely, we're gonna just get X, right? It's unlikely that the interleaving was so particular that both things ran, but there is a possibility. And so again, when you think about signal code, right, there's a lot of dependency on exactly how things execute and exactly how the operating system handles these signals. Yeah. So question is, isn't it insecure if we allow basically this kill command to run? Not maybe, you know, sig user is one thing, but sig term is even worse. So operating systems do restrict this. And on Linux, I think I looked this up, your user ID or effective user ID has to match between the two processes. So you can't just like send sig term to a root process. Right, the operating system will reject that. Okay, any questions on this execution? Yeah.
When 2000 gets to the part where it has to like handle the signal, if it doesn't get the signal at that perfect moment, does it just skip it and move on, or does it like wait for a little bit?
Okay, so with process 2000 here, so it's registered the handler, and does it wait a bit? Like, what happens for sort of when the signal occurs? And so there's no concept of kind of like a waiting unless you explicitly request a wait. And so all this is saying is I've set up a handler, right here, and if the signal comes in and the process is still there and the handler is still set up and it's unmasked, then the operating system can call the handler. But there's sort of no other sort of guarantees around that. But that does kind of lead into a modified version. So what happens in this case? So now we've added a sleep and we're calling the pause at the end. So let's take a minute. Does this change our answer? All right, we have any takers for A, X, Y? How about B, X, just X? C, just Y? Yeah, probably not. D, Y, X? E, F, G, nothing. H, unsure, okay. So what we've done here is we've added a couple things. So first, let's look at this, the while. So what the while pause. So this is intended, basically, this is the way we can keep the process from just exiting, right? Specifically for here, for 2000. Now, instead of when this returns, being like, okay, well, we're done, now we can sort of wait on this. And so we can wait until we get a signal. So that will sort of keep that process sort of active. For the sleep here, this allows us to give some time in the hopes that this process over here has had enough time to set up its signal handler. So when we do this kill just as before, we're still going to get x. But now when we do the second kill, right, our intent is that we've given enough time for the other process to be set up and it has its handler running and it hasn't exited, and so it will also receive the signal here and print y, right? And so our expectation is that we'll get xy. But, right, there's still not really a strict guarantee here, right? We're just putting the sleep one and like, okay, you know, that should be long enough, right? And in practice, it likely will be in a lot of cases. However, the same interleaving could still happen where this process 2000 hasn't been set up yet. And so we could just get X, or we could crash this process as well if we get those bad interleavings. Yeah. DYX. Because the sort of sequence of events of signals, so why is D not an option? We're starting with kill to ourselves, and so this is going to happen before kill returns, and so we're going to print X first. And the only way we can print Y is if this signal, user one, is happening in the other process, which only happens after we've printed X. All right. Yeah.
Can you explain how we're giving more time for process to have, whether with the sleep, because we're calling sig x and then we're calling sleep register, would it go to the end of the run and then the call is killed?
Okay, so question is, why is the sleep helping, right? So we have this sleep over here in the first process. So when sleep runs, that's basically going to be a context switch to the operating system and say, okay, I don't need to run this process for a little while. And the operating system can do something else. And the hope is that while it's doing something else, it's running process B, process 2000, the right-hand side. And so nothing else is going to happen. Like, we haven't done the kill yet. We've registered the handler, but that's it. And so that gives some time where the operating system hopefully can run that. All right. So this is another subtlety of signals, right, where the timing can be tricky. And so getting this right takes some very careful programming. In our last 2 minutes here, I just want to introduce where we'll start next time, which is another tricky part. And this is getting back to what I was talking about with sort of, we have a thread and then we run this handler in the middle of the thread and then we go back. That can have some unexpected consequences. So if you consider this example, right, where we have some function foo, it's mallocing some memory, and then we have our signal handler set up and that does printf. What if, And I'll leave you on this question. What if the signal handler happens in the middle of malloc? So the operating system decides that's the time when it's going to run the signal handler. And the signal handler, remember, is calling printf. And in particular, we've already decided what memory we're going to return to the original call of malloc here, but we haven't yet updated where we left off and where the next allocation should start from. Okay, all right, we will resume thinking about this on Thursday.